Chapter 7. The White Prince of Elgaen gleamed like a fallen jewel on the snow and ice of the Asurian Cape. A fluted helm with cheek guards in the shape of mollusk shells enclosed his face, leaving only a narrow slit for his sea-green eyes. A white cloak snapped behind him in the gale coming in off the cape to batter at the frozen cliffs. The brightly coloured bondfish of Elgaen made living talks about his arms and waist. Their coexistence with the snow blustering through his long green headpiece, made possible by the magic of the ether sea that tidecaster Filenduil had cast ahead of the phalanx. The black and white stripe pattern of the prince's fangmora dizzied the eye as it eeled up the beach through the ether sea. Niel's sword seemed to carve silver from the air as he pointed it forwards to signal the charge. The Archelian of the Morsar Guard lowered their volt spears and, without so much as a cry, crashed over the fleeing oryx. The greenskins were hoary-looking brutes, tusked and tattooed, clad in hide and bone and bristling with coarse white fur. They were hunter-gatherers, armed with bone clubs and primitive spears. The phalanx had burst from the sea to find them straggled along the length of the beach, harvesting crabs, scraping lichen out of cracks in the ice and splashing in the shallows after the frost worms and gall seals that basked there on the rocks. The Morsar guard swept over them like an intide through rocks, volt spear discharges crackling and frothing at the head of the wave. Lurien dug his silver spurs into Venom's flanks and urged the Fangmora to claim his share of the slaughter. The Ishlaen to which he had been attached was the second wave, that which would hit the beach just as the first was dragging its spoils back to the sea. Hacking left and right with their hell-sabres, the knights chopped down those brutes too tough or too stubborn to stay down after the passage of the Morsar. They were not killing strokes. A soul cast into the clutches of the undying king, or whoever it was who took the life essences of these brutes after death, was a wasted one. And so they crippled, dismembered, cuts to the arms, chops to the legs, strokes across the belly that left Oryx floundering in the ether sea, entrails in one hand and stone axes in the other. For soul render Kalar and the Namatai who followed with her. They were difficult to put down, these Oryxes. That Elgaen would even consider raiding the territories claimed by the endless hunts of the Alfrastuns proved the point that Lurien had been trying to make for years, the very point he had in hindsight inelegantly sought to put to gallery here at the Assembral. The Beastclaw Ogor tribes and their Oryx followers were big and hard and almost impossible to stop without killing. Worse, they were not exactly numerous. So even after accepting the cost in lives that such fearsome quarry exacted, the rewards were only ever going to be measly. Hardly the bounty Lurien had been hoping to present to Laramie. If this was the best target that Elgaen's soul scryers could divine, far to the southernmost extremity of the Green Gulch, then victims had become scarce indeed. Lurien squinted up. The sun was a submerged treasure, buried in sky. He touched fingers to his numb face. The cold of Briomdar was immeasurably harsher than anything the Asurian Cape would ever suffer, but wind and snow had nevertheless brought his cheeks out in a painful flush, colouring them indigo, and streamed his eyes with tears. The pearly substance of his war helm was icy to the touch. It was invigorating and strangely wondrous. Arrows whistled from the frozen dunes, cutting Lurien's musings short. Venom reared, the bone-tipped shafts disintegrating in puffs of blue fire and a wash of ozone as they struck her voltaic field, and Lurien flourished his bloodied hellsaber as though he were Tyrion himself. He was clad in breastplate and vambrace of Elgonite pearl, yellow-brown, decorated with golden banding and engravings of the lost gods. It had been a gift from Aunt Laramie. It was, he had been the first to notice, considerably less fine than Niel's all-enclosing plate. His helmet was open-faced. The whirled tattoos of Briamdar colours were visible there, while his cloak and trews were the ice-blue of Turach. Venom herself was caparisoned in the silver ringmail of the Asglir, thicker of neck and longer of tail than the lesser beasts of the Elgonite Ishlaen.
"Airdrain!"
he called out, spurring Venom towards the archers.
"With me!"
He counted about 24 auric archers crazed along the crest of the dune, but more were charging out of their round ice-block beach huts all the time. With monstrous strength, they hauled back on bowstrings made of animal sinew, launching their crude missiles with the power of ballistae. Their aim was atrocious. Leonin might have believed they were actively targeting the sea. But enough of the thick shafts sporadically blistered Venom's voltaic field to make his heart flounce in his chest. The Ishlaen wheeled, and to the sound of swords being slapped against the leathery heads of Fangmorers and dire threats being issued, raced after Prince Lurian. He bared his teeth as wind and ice whipped his face. The beach disappeared beneath his mount. Arrows burned up before he saw them. His heart hammered with the speed and the danger and the simple immediacy of being alive. He was beginning to understand how raiding could become so embedded in the soul, why the likes of Galrohir and Vanglar spent almost as much time striking at land as they did in their palaces. There was something energizing about courting death. His actions had consequences. His existence had meaning. He narrowed his eyes at the rapidly nearing oryx and picked out the first to die. Ha! He swept down with his hellsaber, the stroke perfectly timed to coincide with the archer's neck at the moment Venom brought them together. The Fangmora's momentum multiplied Lurian's strength, and he clove the oryx's trunk-like neck in a single blow. Its body crumpled as its head sailed clear. Venom tore a chunk out of another, arms separating from torso and disappearing down the Fangmora's throat, then tossed the ruined oryx aside. Lurian could see the savage's heart where it still beat inside the pulped mess of shoulder flesh. His eyes widened as it stood back up and roared a challenge. Lurian was spared the need to kill it a second time when an Ishlaen Archelian in a bronze-coloured cloak and back-swept helm ran it through. Then it was bludgeoned to one side on the neck of her Fangmora. A large oryx with a helmet and vambraces of yellowed bone bellowed and hurled itself at Lurian. Frothing at the mouth, the green skin beat at the Idoneth with its bow-stave. Like a bored dilettante picking sweetmeats from a tray, Lurian parried the oryx's attacks. He grinned, enjoying himself. Since his thwarted coronation, he had come to realize that he was not quite the swordmaster that his retainers had allowed him to believe he was. There were probably few amongst Niel's phalanx that he could best in an honest trial of swords, but amongst the savage Auric archers he was speed and grace personified, the exemplar of Eldrazor's art. Keeping the Auric unbalanced with a series of chopping strokes, he allowed Venom to bowl the brute over with a bone-shattering blow from her armoured tail. Still grinning, he brushed the patina of sea-ice crystals from his brow and looked for Eodrain. His retainer had been tight to his flank during the Ishlaen's initial charge from the sea, but neither he nor Lurian had been skilled enough riders to keep to formation once the killing had begun. It took Lurian a moment to find him. Eodrain was beset by 2 gigantic oryx. Their fur-clad bodies were swollen with muscle and a febrile dynamism. Their attacks lent fury by the power of their destroyer god. The Archelian kicked at one. The barbed spurs of his Ishlaen riding boots tore the flesh from the oryx's chin, but it did not seem to feel the blow at all. It buried its axe in his Fangmora's neck. The wound was not a deep one, but the bound beast screamed as the stored charge of its entire body coursed down the bone handle of the oryx's axe and into the savage's hand. The green skin jerked and gibbered. Smoke rose from its shoulders, its skeleton strobing against the charring outline of flesh. The Yorick was briefly haloed in the sapphire glare of a voltaic field. Then there was a snap, and the Yorick finally let go of its axe. It crashed to the ground, as dead as an Yorick could be. The Fangmora issued a keening whine, its voltaic field exhausted. Without the steady hum of its protection, Eodraine looked suddenly vulnerable, as the second Yorick whacked its bow stave across his backplate. The blow unseated the Archelian and threw him to the ground. The terrible novelty of falling and of landing looked almost as shocking to the Archelian as the blow itself, and it was only as his face ploughed into the ice that Eodraine cried out in pain. "Eodraine!" Spurring venom hard, Lurien rode to his retainer's side. The Yorick was wrestling with the now riderless Fangmora, fingers clamped over its snapping jaws. Lurien plunged his hellsaber down through the Yorick's temple and deep into its simple brain. An inch of gold exploded wetly from its open mouth. Lurien grunted as he tried to pull the blade free. Behind him, a savage greenskin bellowed a challenge. He turned to look over his shoulder. An Yorick with a missing arm, a hellsaber wound in its chest where one ventricle of a dark green heart visibly throbbed, ran up the sloped beach with an axe. Venom hissed, as annoyed by the Yorick's persistence as Lurien was. He twisted, tugging furiously at his blade lodged in the Yorick's skull. It was stuck. He looked around for his warriors, but the rest of the Ishlian had flooded over the archers and continued to surge on in the wake of the Morsar. Eodraine groaned and started to push himself up off the ice. With a curse, Lurien pitched himself from Venom's saddle. He hit the hard ground and rolled, snatched up Eodraine's sword, and continued the roll onto his back, just in time to catch the Yorick's blow. The Yorick's axe smashed into the hellsaber hard enough to splinter the crudely napped bone and drive the dulled back edge of the Archelian sword to Lurien's cheek. The greenskin kicked him in the chest, skidding him a short way up the ice, and dragged its ruined weapon back for a killing blow. Its muscular torso swelled like a killing sea. Blood roared in Lurien's head, and he yelled, overcome by the emotion of living. The whistling filled his ears, a noise he presumed to be associated with the life fleeing an Ideneth's body, until he saw the arrows sprouting from the back of the Yorick's head. It toppled like a felled tree, Lurien hurriedly parting his legs to avoid his feet being crushed in its fall. Namariel lowered her whisper bow. Elgaean's reavers swept past her, loosing shafts at targets further up the beach as they ran.
"I thought it was the duty of a retainer to protect his lord," she said. "Not the other way around."
"Eodraine has his uses," said Lurien.
"Making you look good with a sword, for one."
Lurien winced as he bent to offer Eodraine his hand. His breastplate had taken the brunt of the Yorick's kick, but he was feeling the unpleasant oddity of a bruise spreading across his chest. Eodraine regarded his hand for a moment, but then appeared to realise that they were not in Elgaean any more, and took it, returning the prince's grip with a squeeze and allowing himself to be pulled up. The Archelian nodded his gratitude, then climbed back into his Fangmora's saddle. The injured, bound beast sagged under his weight. Lurien turned back to the Namartai.
"You are supposed to be further back," he said.
"We are further back," said Namariel. "You've fallen behind."
Lurien's joy at having fought and lived warred with annoyance at his bride-to-be. As soon as he was returned to Elgaean, he would insist on a private meeting with Larimer, and he would remain there until the Esharan found a way to rid him of his promise.
"I am new at this," he said.
"Even Van Glyer would not have done it perfectly first time," said Eodraine.
"You need to be better," said Namariel, "or at least to look better."
She turned to Eodraine and curtsied.
"So thank you, Lord Eodraine."
The Archelian glowered. A cohort of Lanmari armed thralls hurried towards them before Lurien could intervene, pinning still-struggling Yorick's to the ice with swift thrusts of their blades. Soulrender Kaelar, clad in starfish-encrusted armour with shagreen boots and gauntlets, drove her talon hook into the hard ground and surveyed the slaughter through her faceless helm. The Soulrender's talon hook was runewood, a dark and twisted oak from the deepest crevasses of Briomdar, very rare, crowned by an Elgaean pearl that glowed with an inner light. The natural patterning of the orb warped and writhed with its soul pulse, settling over the dying like the boiling gaze of the Prince of Excess. She lowered the talon pearl to an auric's brow. Its struggles ceased as the spirit was drawn from it. Its body breathed on regardless. The pearl shone a little brighter. When Kalar reached Namariel and the other reavers, she cursorily checked them for injuries and satisfied herself that they were few and minor. With a jerk of her head, she dismissed them. Lurien was glad to see that Kalar was frugal. Through the medium of the Namastir rune that the Namatai all wore, the Soulrender's power could be used to restore an injured warrior, even to return one from the cusp of death. But, of course, doing so required expenditure of the very resource they came ashore to claim. "How many souls is that claimed for Elgaean?" Lurien asked, catching Venom's reins again and drawing her to him.
"A score,"
Kalar rasped, her voice feminine and cold, echoing from the confines of her sealed helm.
"Thrice that again if you tally their livestock and herd beasts. Useful for the crafting of soul objects, if not the giving of Namatai life."
"Hardly worth the effort," said Lurien.
Kalar's own opinion remained inscrutable.
"What if we were to take the fort itself?"
Shielding his eyes against the flurrying snow, Lurien looked up. The beach was sloped and rugged, carved by ice and wave, and presumably rocky beneath the encrusting ice. Jutting cliffs broke the headland, squalled by squig colonies and vicious seabirds. The ground at the foot of the cliffs was blistered with ice-block huts, pens made of bone in which semi-domesticated war boars and mourn fangs rutted and stamped and snorted steam. A great swathe of the back shore was strewn with what litter an auric could neither eat nor find warlike use for. Hacked out of the cliff ice, blasted by spray where carved channels forced the wave uprush far from the break zone, stood the fort of the Alfrostan Ogors. Its design was crude, temporary by nature, a shape that a child would draw if told to produce a picture of a castle. But scale alone made it a threatening prospect. An aura of blistering cold shrouded the battlements, watering Lurien's eyes even from afar. Felinduil's ether sea did not extend that far. It lapped instead at the slippery islets of frozen rock that surrounded it, separated from one another by brine pools and water channels, spanned by crude bridges and colonized by the largest of the auric ice huts. It was those huts that Nael and his Morsar guard were now ransacking. As Lurien watched, they began to break off, sliding back to the sea like the downwash of a broken wave. The Ishlaen were still pushing on without him, flanked and supported by reavers and thralls, but would break themselves as soon as they met the withdrawing Morsar. A single Alapex swam belligerently to the phalanx's far right, away from the Alfrostan fort, herding aurochs towards Kalar and her talon hook with shots from its Archelian rider's harpoon. Lurien might have wished for a Leviadon, but then he might have wished for many things and been disappointed. Elgaean was a small enclave, largely bypassed by the great beasts of the ocean, nor was it exactly renowned for the skill of its embalers, as was Turach.
"Tradcaster Felinduil would need to extend the ether sea for your mats to make it that far," said Kalar, mirroring his thoughts. "I doubt the old elf has the power, and it is power that we would need from him later if we were to attempt to wrest the souls from the Ogors."
Lurien nodded, disgruntled but accepting the soul render's argument.
"Another day, perhaps," said Eodren.
"I have a tyrant to slay and a crown to reclaim," said Lurien,
"and, if possible, a promise to escape from.
I do not have the luxury of time. Where is Filinduil?" he asked the soul render. "Where the tides take him," she said, "and vice versa."
"My lady,"
one of Kalar's Lanmari thralls called urgently but softly, leaving his greatsword to rest tip down in the ice to point towards the cliffs.
"Prince Niall."
Prior to their departure with Niall's phalanx, Lurien had asked Namariel why she had not furnished him with a volt spear back in Briomdar and ensured him a place in the Morsar Guard. The Morsar of Elgain were hardly as glamorous a cohort as Churak's elite Asclear, or even the Slither Guard of Briomdar, but Lurien was not so innocent to war that he did not know where a battle's glory would be taken. It was the Morsar who were first onto the breach, who led the charge, volt spears lowered, and broke the foe for the soul renders and the reavers who followed. Namariel had quietly explained that glory was there for the taking, provided Lurien lived to pick it up from such warriors when they fell. Following the thrall's pointed finger, he began to understand her meaning. Mobs of boar-mounted savage aurochs were pounding from the headland corals, flowing like ice-melt streams to converge upon the Morsar Guard. Feral packs of frost sabers, leonine beasts with white pelts and sword-like fangs loped alongside them, eager for their share of the kill. With an explosion of bone, a land behemoth of a kind that Lurien had never seen and could not have imagined strode through one of the Auric's primitive stockades. A huge ogre wrapped in a shawl of white fur sat in a palanquin-like saddle on its humped shoulders, manning what looked like a sling catapult loaded with blocks of ice. The size of the beast almost stilled Lurien's heart, and the ether sea itself seemed to freeze solid at the approach of its wintry aura. Lurien whispered fervent prayers of thanks to whichever gods still strained their ears for the desperate pleadings of the Eiduneth. The huge beast smashed at the frozen ether sea with tusks like whale bones, but the solidifying air was actually slowing the monster down. Enough that it was still 100 yards up the beach when the Auric's countercharge hit. It was carnage. War boars gored giant eels on their tusks, squealing in porcine delight as they trampled the invader beasts under their trotters. Savage Auric's, wielding an axe in each fist and maniacal grins on their faces, hacked volt spears to pieces and set about continuing their butchery on armour and flesh. Leaping frost sabers tore Archelian knights from saddles, pinning the elves to the ice under their forepaws and ripping them open with vicious teeth. Savage aurochs and knights of the Morsar swirled and mingled, the lethal whirlpool that forms at the convergence where two great oceans meet. Niall's sword flashed, pearl white. Lurien was suddenly quite content with a place amongst the Ishlaean. What had been an orderly backrush was dashed on jagged, green-skinned rocks, runnelling towards separate pools that would never reach the sea. The Ishlaean's uprush broke in its wake, while Namatai reavers loosed arrows to cover the disorderly retreat.
"We should fall back," said Namariel. "So soon?" said Lurien. "It is our way, in and out like the tide."
"What of Niall?"
"Larame will grieve, and then she will see that she needs a new heir."
Lurien froze for a moment as his mind worked through the implications of Namariel's apparent suggestion.
"Not all of them were bad."
He shook his head.
"I will not be the elf that goes back to tell Queen Larame her son has fallen. If I am to make a big enough reputation in the small amount of time that I have, I need to do something that these warriors will return home and talk about."
Sliding his foot into the stirrup, he swung himself onto Venom's back, then turned her towards the embattled Morsar. He raised his sword with a flourish.
"As Teclis is harsh and Tyrion wrathful, for Lagithae and Larame and for the jade throne of Briomdar, deep gain to me!"
The sword came down to point up the beach as he kicked his spurs into Venom's flanks.
Charge!
He could hear Namariel yelling after him, but he was already too far away, moving too swiftly to heed her even if he had wanted to. For that he was grateful. The wind whistled past his ears. Snow battered his face. He leant over the saddle horn to hug Venom's neck, making himself a smaller target for Auruk arrows, his cloak whipping out behind him. He could not tell if the Namatai were following. If they were, they were well behind, but he dared not look back. The Fangmorers were one of the fleetest and most agile beasts in the ocean, and there was no ground obstacle they need fear, swimming through ether seas 6 feet above any terrestrial hazard. But at the insane speed that Venom was moving, a collision with a floating body part or piece of debris could prove deadly. He caught a glimpse of an Ishlian's shocked face as he flashed past the milling warriors. There was a moment of sound. Agitated Fangmorers. Harness jingling. Lurien was aware of the doctrines of war that Namariel had referred to. How she had become so familiar with them he did not know, but they had been drummed into him at the Azydrasor. The wave broke and then it withdrew. It never broke on the same land twice. As far as he was concerned, Vanglaer could shout his lessons from Tor Mathlan until he choked on them.
"Turn and charge!"
Lurien yelled into the teeth of the wind. He was not sure if any of the Ishlaen heard him. He barely heard himself. But they could not have failed to misconstrue his intention. He struggled to raise his sword against the howling gale. The cold was sharpening, cutting into bone. He had never before realized that cold could be a sensation in its own right, more than just the power to numb a body to all other sensations. A wall of freezing brine erupted from the outermost water channel with the mountain-breaking power of a crashing wave. Venom shot through it. He was in amongst the ice huts now. Urien's chest felt tight. It was becoming difficult to breathe. He could sense Venom wheezing. Her gills trembled, sucking on gelid water. The threat of suffocation would have panicked a lesser beast, but Venom had been taken as a mount for the Asglir, and the Turak Embalers had been thorough in destroying the animal's free will. Lurien unfroze that portion of ether sea that filled his mouth with a long, bitter cry, and struck with his sword. A boar Auruk died. Like a butcher driven fully to madness by Malachi, the temptations of bloody excess, Lurien hacked left and right, ignoring the bright sprays of blood as Venom's momentum ploughed her through the squealing boars. The Fangmora trembled for air as she bit down on the hindquarters of a frost sabre. A twist of the neck dragged the hunting cat onto its side. Lurien bent low in the saddle, leant almost parallel to the ground, and stabbed the struggling beast through the neck as Venom raced over it. His chest burned with cold, and before any mortal could have adjusted to the speed of change, he was there in the heart of the melee, the eye of a vortex that funneled down to death and darkness and worse, damnation. Lurien shot glances over both shoulders as he brought Venom under control. With the shock fading, many greenskins now littering the ground, food for riderless war boars, the Arkelian rallied. The beautifully armoured knights of Elgain stabbed at the Auruk berserkers with volt spears or traded tooth and claw with pearl-edged daggers when the savages came too close. Frost rimed their war gear and glazed the sea-green blush of their cheeks. Of the 15 warriors that had ridden through the mantle tide gate in Nael's Morsar Guard, only 7 remained. A handful of those were trying to wheel their mounts around and break for the sea, but the beasts were sluggish, mouths working for breath, and refused to respond to the Arkelian's lash. The ferocious howl drew Lurien's attention as a frost saber sank back onto its haunches and launched itself at Venom, forepaws upraised to drag the Fangmora's neck to the ice. Lurien turned his sword, already too late, screaming as a Morsar's volt spear caught the frost saber in the belly. The voltaic blast propelled it sideways, the beast rolling and skidding on the ice where it fell. The White Prince of Elgain cast down the spent volt spear and drew his Arkelian longsword from the whale-skin scabbard strapped to his Fangmora's neck.
Do I owe you, or do you owe me? He panted.
Even, I think,
Leorien breathed in return. He turned to hack down a boar auroch, only for the ferocity of its charge to drive Venom back until she was flank to flank with Nael's lighter mount. Their harnesses jangled together, barbs interlocking. Nael rammed his sword through a charging auroch's face, the pearly blade erupting from the back of its skull. Leorien gasped for breath.
"Did you wonder why I agreed to let you join my phalanx?" said Nael.
Leorien shook his head.
"Beggars cannot be choosers."
"I was hoping you would die, solve Lanamay's problem for her."
"I think Namariel was hoping the same from you."
Nael grinned fiercely. It may have been the unearthly cold that forced Leorien's heart to pump warm blood into his veins, but something about his cousin's expression thrilled him to the marrow.
"Well," said the Elgar Knight, "we are family."
Leorien's lips pricked. He'd always found the charade of house and family to be ridiculous, a surprisingly long-lived jest that Idoneth of good sense could enjoy at the expense of those who took it so seriously. When Nael said it, he could almost believe in it. The arrival of the Ishlaean guard spared Leorien the embarrassment of words. The knight's charge smashed through the already wavering aurex and broke them. The triumphant Ishlaean drove the greenskins and their beasts back, the way a wave would pick up a log and push it higher up the shore. Leorien saluted Eodren with his sword as his fellow Archelian exhorted the Ishlaean to ride the aurochs down and harvest their souls, only to see their charge falter. Ice splintered under trunk-like feet, a single swipe of monstrous tusks dismounting four Ishlaean and hurling them from their fangmoras. The land leviathan had waded at last into the fray. To Lurien's horror, the Ishlaean it had discarded neither floated in ether sea nor fell to the ground. Rather, they froze in place, screams silenced as the arcane waters around them hardened. The warbeast's ogre rider laughed until his belly shook. Namatai reavers riddled the beast with arrows, but its thick hair was proof against such irritants. Namariel put two arrows in quick succession through the ogre's cheek and jowl, but her missiles were as perilous to the huge warrior as a pin was to a cushion. At Kayla's command, the reavers fell back, and the soul render stepped forwards. Singling out Oryx with her talon hook pearl, she ripped the souls from their bodies even as they attempted to rally against the stunned Ishlaean and return to the fray. But even Leorien could see that it would take more powerful magic than hers to stop the ogre and his winter beast from crushing the knights underfoot.
"Back to the water!"
Nael choked, turning his steed.
"Back to the sanctuary of Mathlan!"
"No!" said Leorien. "We can take it, all of them! Take their souls for Elgaean!"
As he spoke, a resurgent tide buffeted him. His cloak riffled beneath his arms and rushed forwards. Drawing it from his face, Leorien turned to see a great wave in the ether sea, sparkling and emerald green, bearing tide-caster Philenduil on its crest. With one hand out, palm forward and his eyes closed, the old Isharan swung his staff. That tiny ripple became a tidal wave, a hammer of water that smashed the frozen ether sea around the war-beast's body. Suddenly, Leorien could breathe again. Namariel put another arrow in the ogre's chest. It chuckled, flicking it out with a giant finger.
"Back!"
Nael roared.
"We can take them all!"
said Leorien.
"We don't have the strength!"
Leorien reached out to grasp Nael's vambrace just as he began to pull away, a brazen act of familiarity that took the Elganite prince aback.
"Then let us hit another target, a richer target. We can return to Laramae as heroes." "There is no such place. The days when the Idoneth could pillage the coasts at whim passed with Sigmar's war storm and the Necroquake." I know of one place still left," said Lurien, suddenly glad to have been condemned to so many idle tides in his mother's chambers. Little better to do than memorize every detail of her great map of the gulch. He released his cousin's arm and bid venom into the downrush.
"If you trust me, cousin!"